This is The Topic is Trek, episode 78, for Friday, October 30th, 2020. Coming up in this episode, All Access does it to us again. Voyager gets small. And we have a lot to discover. All that and more, right now on The Topic is Trek. Alexa, order four lights.
I see there is a better deal on the five-pack. Add it to your cart.
Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, The Topic is Trek. Engage already. And I have visions of all these five packs of lights showing up at people's houses. And please do not send the bills to us because we have a zero budget. So we can't help you out with that. Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another thrill-packed episode of The Topic is Trek. I'm Clinton, one of your co-hosts, and co-host implies that there are other hosts. Let's bring them in right now. First of all, beaming in from parts unknown once again is Mr. Craig Stepp.
Nanu Nanu.
No.
I mean, I think you've used that one before.
Oh, did I overstep myself?
I think the fact that you realize that that's kind of like science fictiony type of thing, you're fixating on that one. But you know, really branch out. It could be anything. You know, just come up with your own phrase. No pressure. Just have something for next time.
Shazbot.
No. And also beaming in to join me is the other co-host, Mr. Chuck Tomasi.
I'm going to warm up for this one.
Ta pa ta be.
Gesundheit.
To be or not to be, Captain. That is the question that preoccupies my people.
Indeed. And it's an exciting day for Chuck. You had something in hand today that was pretty exciting.
I did. The fourth edition of Podcasting for Dummies showed up on my doorstep today. Thank you, T. Morris. Thank you to my lovely wife. Thank you to Rich Siegfried, who did the editing. It was very much a team effort this time around. So lots of credit to everybody involved. Dr. Pamela Gay did the foreword in the fourth edition. So I invite you to go pick it up. It'll be available on November 3rd on all your favorite bookstores and websites. And I really would love to see a picture of somebody in the line to vote reading Podcasting for Dummies. That would make my day.
So make it happen, people. That's make right. It happen. They can't say make it so because that's somebody else's tagline.
Yeah. And Clinton and I will say you're welcome, by the way, because all the moral support we gave you.
The Topic is Trek is mentioned more than a couple of times in there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
As is common.
Spoiler alert.
And Technorama. Yes, we have. It's not a self-serving book. There are lots of other podcasts mentioned as examples. But the, we snuck in some pictures and mentions.
Cool.
Okay. I got to go buy it again.
There you go. They did the backwards to the book, which doesn't work because that means I start off with a paragraph for Chuck and then I just keep backspacing until it's gone.
Like a George Lucas film. We're never done with this thing. I got a great idea. Streaming, live streaming.
Oh, it's brilliant. All right. Well, enough of that. How about some of this? Because we have a lot to discuss this week, including three episodes of Discovery. But we're going to start things off with Subspace Chatter, if, of course, it's okay with you, Charlie X.
We should really, maybe rename this to like the engine room or something, just because he's never going to do it.
He might.
Well, he's not going to do it if that monitor keeps going off. The machine was asleep, so the sound effect didn't go off. Come on, wake up. All right. Well,
Let's move on.
Charlie failed.
Maybe that was okay. Maybe he's okay with it this week. Yeah. All right. Excellent.
We don't need any of that sus-based chatter.
Don't tell him. Don't tell Charlie that we're doing this. So Chuck is going to read the first story, but in a regular voice, not a whisper.
I kind of like the whisper.
No.
Oh, boy. We should have guessed the day after we recorded our most recent episode of The Topic is Trek. I'm glad you put that in the editorial. CBS All Access announced the renewal of Star Trek Discovery for a fourth season. How about that? They just started, you know, I should talk to them about renewing for a fifth edition of Podcasting for Dummies.
I'll get Kurtzman on the phone right now.
Franchise Captain right. Alex Kurtzman and Michelle Paradise will continue to serve as co-showrunners. Did I say that right? Not show co-runners. Co-showrunners on season four. We note that this will be the first time that the series has had its official showrunners carry over from season to season. Oh, shocking. Production on the new season will begin Monday, November 2nd, but everybody's going to be in separate rooms and wearing masks. So, well, Saru's covered.
I was going to say, some people, they're all set. There's not a problem with that.
Saru's above everybody. You don't have to worry about it.
Suddenly they just lose all the, you know, the air supply on the ship and everybody has to be inside spacesuits. It's a concept piece as well.
The whole season.
It's a big hole that they've got to patch up there.
Oh, literally a whole season.
Yes, a season about a hole. The Deep Space Nine. Anyway, let's move on from there.
Right. Well, if it feels like we just celebrated Star Trek Day. Oh, wait, we did. It's been a long year this month. Forgive me, people. However, CBS and Paramount and Amazon and IDW Publishing have announced that November will be Star Trek month.
Month?
Yeah, the whole month.
Why November? Why not? September is when the show was launched. You know, you got First Contact Day in April. Why November?
Yeah. I don't know. Well, let's move on. I don't know. Politics. We'll ask those questions later.
I got Jeff Bezos on the phone right now.
Oh, yeah.
Christmas already on the line. I got no lines.
He's on speed dial. Anyway, by purchasing $25 worth of select Trek DVDs or Blu-ray box sets on Amazon, customers can get free Star Trek digital copies. We have a link to the details about the promotion in the show notes for episode 78 over at The Topic is Trek, insert commonly recognizable sound effect here, .com.
A ding. By the way, that's digital comics. You said copies, which I think you do get digital copies.
Oh, did I say? I'm sorry.
You order from Digital Comics, they send you a paper.
Yeah, there you go. No, so you get the digital, you can get digital comics, but you also get the digital versions of the movies or the episodes or whatever you get. So they'd be in your library, I guess.
Which always confused me because you've got, it's a DVD. That's a digital copy. Yes. I don't understand. It's kind of weird. Unless you've got one of those strange film DVDs, it's a very odd thing. Okay, let's move on once again. We've been following this story for a while now. And on October 24th, Captain Catherine Janeway statue was unveiled in her future birthplace of Bloomington, Indiana. The fan group Catherine Janeway Bloomington Collective was responsible for the concept and collected all the necessary funding. Hence the name Collective, I guess. Oh. The group worked with the Bloomington art community to bring the vision to life. Kate Mulgrew made a virtual appearance at the ceremony, saying in part, "I'm not often rendered speechless, but at this moment," oh no, she went on. "At this moment, I am. It's a wonderful comment on Janeway's legacy." As we previously reported, Mulgrew will reprise her role in the upcoming animated Nickelodeon series, Star Trek Prodigy. And as if that wasn't enough Janeway news, the autobiography of Catherine Janeway by Una McCormick was just released. Now, so far, it's been getting mixed reviews, but you can check it out for yourself. We have a link to a sample section, and you can find that in the show notes for episode 78 over at thetopicistrek.com.
Well, you didn't say insert commonly recognized.
I think by now we should have the flow.
It needs to be in big red bold letters. Chuck, hit the bell here.
I'm working on it.
All right.
And the show notes are being updated as we speak.
There they are.
All right.
It's bold. It's not big and red yet. We'll get there. You people don't know what you're missing if you're not watching the video. We need to live stream something some point. All right. Remember that episode of Deep Space Nine where the Rubicon was shrunk down to about a half a foot long? That's nothing compared to this. While doing research on artificial microswimmers, researchers have been having fun with their microscopic 3D printers. Bored with basic shapes, the research, of course, you know, you just don't want to print a cube. We done the Borg, you know, many times. So what did they do? They've been printing more complex shapes in order to test the flexibility and accuracy of their printers. These shapes included Benchy the Tugboat. We talked about that on Technorama the other night. It was printed at just 30 micrometers and a 15 micrometer USS Voyager. For more information about the research and the to see photos of Benchy and Voyager, browse on over to the show notes over at episode 78 at the topic is Trek. Insert overused sound effect here.com. And we did cover this, and it actually, you can propel it because it's going through hydrogen peroxide. They put in a little piece of, what was it, platinum, Craig?
Yeah, I think that was
something like that.
Yeah.
And it must just dissolve enough and expel some, you know, exhaust to make it propel. Like, that's pretty darn cool. I would love to see a little Voyager under a microscope going, wow, am I looking through this telescope the wrong way?
Right. So they weren't lost in another quadrant. They were actually just miniaturized and in their own little pocket universe.
I'm telling you, the next ship they've got to make is the little one from the Fantastic Voyage.
Yeah.
Yeah, it might be about the right size. I don't remember how small that actually was. It might be getting close to the
it was too big.
Well, yeah, I mean, you don't want that thing expanding when it's in there, so.
Yeah. Be like aliens. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
You're so good.
Out comes Voyager.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Here's your prayer stone right here. Hey.
There's caffeine in that body.
Yeah. Anyway, you probably heard that there's a new batch of Star Trek postage stamps on the way, but don't rush off to the U.S. Postal Office yet to get them.
No.
No, the two set of stamps are being issued by the United Kingdom's Royal Mail, and they don't work here.
I'll send you a postcard from London.
No wonder we got rid of them. They wouldn't give us their postage stamps.
Yeah, dang it. Anyway, London artist Freya Betts has designed the 12 stamps that feature crew members from virtually every small screen version of Trek. The full color stamps have likenesses of Captain Kirk, Picard, Sisko, Janeway, Archer, and Lorca, as well as Spock, Deanna Troi, Dr. Julian Bashir, and Lieutenant Malcolm Reed, Commander Michael Burnham, and Ash Tyler.
What? No, Chief That's O'Brien?
A lot of stamps.
Chief O'Brien. They missed the most important man in the universe.
Well, he's so important, he can't just be on a stamp.
He's on the package.
Yeah, his picture is like the wrapping paper.
Yeah. There's also a smaller 6 stamp set that highlights characters from Star Trek movies who are portrayed by British actors, including Simon Pegg as Scotty, David Warner as Chancellor Gorkon, Tom Hardy as Shinzon, Malcolm McDowell as Soren, and Alice Eve as Carol Marcus, and Idris Elba as Krall.
What about the Gorn?
What about the Gorn?
He was British, right?
He's Scottish. He's not British.
Yes.
Is there a difference?
It's not McGorn.
How do you know? He didn't give his actual name.
Gorn McGorn? Know that.
He could be Gorn McGorn face for all you know. I doubt that very much, but.
No, boy.
You could have asked him about getting married in that other episode of Lower Decks. You could have, you know.
I laughed. I'm going to tell you, I laughed out loud when He said, "What a Gorn wedding!" They all turned around.
What were you expecting? Well, what we weren't expecting was what we got when we clicked through a bunch of headlines this week. Essentially, you were seeing headlines all over the place saying that there will be a new prequel series with with Riker and Troy. And you go, what? There's another show on CBS All Access? Well, actually, no. Star Trek Picard brought back Jonathan Frakes as William Riker and Marina Sirtis as Deanna Troi from Star Trek The Next Generation in an episode of Star Trek Picard. Of course, the two former Starfleet officers had retired to the planet Nepenthe. An upcoming Star Trek Picard prequel novel will reveal more about their life aboard the USS Titan. Boimler, I'm sure, will not be in this, and their role in events that transpired after the attack on Mars. The book is titled Star Trek Picard. It's Star Trek, Picard, The Dark Veil, written by veteran Star Trek, James Swallow, Star Trek Discovery, Fear Itself. Oh, you need a colonoscopy going on here. The novel is the second.
By the way, those are silent.
So that's not the same as insert the noise? Okay.
Oh, I thought it was like a script. Picard said.
The novel is the second Star Trek Picard tie-in after Star Trek Picard, The Last Best Hope. Goes on sale in January. So yes, you're going to get those clickbaity headlines January.
I'm not going to lie. I saw the title. I went, oh, and I clicked on it. What? Whoa.
You
novel. You know, that was slightly less enthused at that point. Yeah,
exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. I have to click on all these links because I got to evaluate the stories. I went, oh, come on. That's a cheap shot.
I was waiting for something to happen at work. Like I was, creating an image or something, software image. And I was waiting and I went clicking around, went, what? And I clicked on it. I got all excited.
You know, that planet that Riker and Troy went to, kind of gives me an idea for another spinoff show.
Oh?
Star Trek Ruripente. Imagine the prison stories they could tell.
It's like Prison Break, only harsher.
Orange is
not everybody keeps their genitals in the same place.
Right. Yeah, maybe we don't want to see
that. Oh, wait. That was for later. In the show.
Yeah, maybe that's not a good idea. Okay, well, now we don't have any news coming out of Vulcan, Alberta, Canada this time around, but to make up for that, we have 66 additional stories that you can read involving Star Trek. All the colons you want are in these stories, so if you're looking for more of those, we've got dashes, yeah. We've got hyphens, we've got apostrophes all over the place in these stories, so whatever kind of punctuation you want, even the hyperlinks are underlined, we've got that going on as well. You can check out all these 66 stories, as well as the links to the stories we already talked about, over in the show notes for episode 78 at, wow, jumped the gun there, at
time travel.
the topic is Trek.
Hey, by the way, there was one bit of news from Vulcan, Alberta, Canada.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, they were collectively tired of being told to go vote after seeing it on the internet all the time.
Say we all, if I may quote a different franchise.
We're going to have some kind of tagline like this is. This episode of Topic is Trek has more colons than, well, never mind.
We made it all the way through. Yeah. So I'm kind of reluctant to wake up Charlie to tell him that we're done, but I'm going to do it anyway and see if he says anything. Hey, Charlie, hey, it's time.
I want to say,
Yeah, exactly.
No.
All right. Now it's time to head out on our main mission. And as I mentioned before, we are going to be talking about episodes 1 2, and 3 of season 3 of Star Trek Colton. I'm not doing the name of Star Trek Discovery.
Star Trek: Discovery.
Star Trek: Discovery.
It's a completely different show altogether when you say it.
Star Trek
way.
Colonoscopy.
Yeah. All right.
Okay.
Let us begin. And what we're going to do is we're going to do a rundown of the episodes, and then we'll be discussing kind of the all three of them as a group, if you will. One as if it was one giant movie, discussing all the parts. Okay. But let's break it down. Again, spoiler alert, we will be talking about these three episodes. So if you're not caught up, stop right now.
Do we need the thing?
Yeah. Let's wrap this up, shall we?
Oh, wrong button.
Let's wrap this up, shall we?
Wrong button. They're both red. I hit the wrong one. Can somebody get that? can somebody get that? Thanks.
Ah, thank you.
I'll be in the shuttle bay. I'm heading out.
We'll begin with a recap of episode 1.
Episode 1, That Hope Is For You. No, That Hope Is You. I thought it was That Hope Is Not For You. The Hope Is You part 1, and then Craig will be doing part 2, Far From Home. So, That Hope Is You was released on October 15th, 2020, written by Michelle Paradise, Jenny Lumet, and Alex Kurtzman, directed by Olatun Osunsamini. Something like that.
Latunde Osunsami.
Oh, okay. We're gonna go with that and be ready because
what Clinton said.
This could go anywhere. Briefing overview: exiting the wormhole, Michael Burnham arrives in the year 3188, but she is not on Terra Elysium, and Discovery is Discovery is nowhere to be found. It's a bad day. You know, it's like Monday in the new universe.
Times 930 years. Yeah.
That's the worst kind of Mondays.
Burnham has to trust a stranger, Cleveland Booker. I'm not sure I trust him yet, but we'll get to that later. He has to trust him to be her guide and help her find a way to contact her crew. From Book, Burnham learns that in an event referred to as the Burn, most of the galaxy's known supply of dilithium, poof, it exploded, rendering warp travel impossible. As a result, the Federation began to collapse, shrinking in size and influence. Only the, quote, true believers, this sounds like a cult now, they still cling to the notion of the United Federation of Planets. Unbeknownst to Burnham, Book is on a mission of his own to bring in a giant trance worm to safety on Sanctuary 4. The two have a run-in with security at the Mercantile, as well as the poacher from whom Book liberated the transworm, whom Book referred to as Molly. Book and Burnham barely escape via the use of Book's personal transporter. Book introduces Burnham to the would-be Federation liaison Aditya Sahil, and the search for Discovery and other remnants of the Federation begins.
And that ends part one of a story that doesn't have a part two.
Yeah, so
I have a feeling the part two is coming later in the season, though.
Could be.
I thought it was just like the opening episode 1 and 2.
Well, it says part one. So The Hope Is You is part one. I think part two will be later in the season.
When have you ever seen a part one that where the part two isn't immediately followed up?
Well, the reason I can tell you why, but I think that, but... Okay.
Then he had to kill you, so you don't want to.
Or do you want to go through this first before we can start the conjecture?
Let's stop here for a second. Why do you think? Because we might forget about that when we get there. Why do you think?
Yeah. Well, you know, obviously Starfleet's in disarray or not even really around much, very little of it. So I have a feeling that Michael is going to have an impact on bringing. Or even the Discovery as a whole is going to be bringing everything back together. So that Hope Is You part two will be when Starfleet starts making its return.
I would buy that up until today, because today I was doing research. Hard to believe I do research for the show, but I do research for the show. And I went to IMDb, and I'm trying to go there right now to do this. Went to, the page for Discovery and the most recent episode, and a character that gets introduced in episode 3, which we'll get to talking about, I clicked through to their IMDb page for the actor mm-hmm. themselves, and it listed their appearance in all the rest of the episodes this season and listed their names. So we get there right now.
Is there a part 2? I often do that on other shows that I look at. I was like, now I kind of have a clue of what's going to happen.
So there is a, because there is a part 1 and a part 2 of a different story near the end of the season.
Okay.
But there's no part 2 of That Hope Is You.
Hmm.
But I remember, because I remember also, I seem to remember that like Voyager and some of the other shows would do the same thing where it was odd that it would have a name of something part 1. And then the second part would have a different name.
Yeah, this isn't the first time I've seen that. I think TS9 did that too.
So it's almost like, yeah, you can consider this next episode, Far From Home, as part 2. They just don't call it that, but I consider it the other side of the coin, right?
Yeah.
So but let's hear about the episode itself, and Craig's going to tell us.
All right. So the next episode was Far From Home. And it aired on October 22nd. Same writers and everything.
Now I have to do this like SpongeBob. 1 year later.
Yeah, yes. 1 year later. So, yeah, a year later. The Discovery has an emergency ice landing on a planet that appears to have had a giant chunk of its surface ripped away.
Borg.
The landing, huh?
Borg.
Borg. The landing damages many Discovery systems, and crash landing seems to have triggered some emotional trauma for Lieutenant Detmer. To make matters worse, the ice is actually parasitic and begins to encase the ship as night falls. Stamets has to reluctantly team up with Reno to repair damage on an EPS conduit. After identifying pockets of advanced technology on the planet, Saru and Tilly leave the ship, hoping someone, somewhere, can help them repair the communications translator assembly. They follow a humanoid figure to a mining settlement. Cal, one of the Corradians living in the settlement, uses programmable matter to create a new translator. While
I don't know why I kept correcting it or something.
Translator?
Translator is actual thing.
It's like so a potato that used to be a man. Now it's a woman.
Yeah. It's like when they made that, we can now hear the pain that potatoes go through.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Oh, I see, because Google Docs doesn't recognize that that's a word, but it's translator is the actual thing.
Oh, I'm sorry, translator. While his brother, Osler, tells Saru about a treacherous courier by the name of Zori. Zori. I'm trying to remember how to spell it. Anyway, Zori.
Zara.
Zara. Okay. Is responsible for damage caused to their machinery. Before Saru and Tilly can leave, Zora arrives. Eventually, Giorgio enters, apparently captured by some of Zara's men. But the Emperor turns the tables, and she and Saru overpowers the criminals. The criminals.
Criminals?
Yeah, them. The Saru. Do what?
The smooth criminals.
That's right. Saru leaves Zora's fate into Osler, to Osler, who sends Zora out to the night with only Tilly's survival pack to defend him from the ice. Repairs made. Discovery attempts to lift off from the planet, but the ice has gained too much of a foothold. Suddenly, a tractor beam lifts the trapped ship, and a familiar face appears on screen. Michael Burnham, with long, flowing, braided hair. She says she arrived a year ago.
And got everybody Christmas presents.
Aww.
Well, the chocolate went bad because you bought it a year ago.
Yeah, you got to put that thing in the refrigerator. Ooh,
the peeps are stale.
That's right.
Okay, and now we'll talk about we'll give the synopsis of the third episode, People of Earth, which first was released on October 29th, 2020. This one was written by, I think it was okay with me just with people just going Bo Kim and Erica Lippold, and directed by some upstart newcomer, Jonathan Frakes.
His name's hard to pronounce.
Yeah, something may come of that kid sooner or later.
I think we'll it's Frakes.
After rescuing Discovery from a potentially icy death, Burnham returns to the ship for a heartfelt reunion. However, we soon learn that in the year that has passed, while she had never given up hope on finding her shipmates, she learned how to let go of them and concentrate on her new life. We learn that she has also been able to contact Terralysium, but no one there has ever heard of Gabriel Burnham. Michael Burnham also brings news of a partial transmission from Earth by an Admiral Senatal. Utilizing the spore drive, Discovery is able to reach Earth, something she and Book would never have been able to do. However, rather than being welcoming, Earth's defense grid is activated upon Discovery's approach. Captain Doya of the United Earth Defense Force is suspicious of the unidentified ship, and an inspection party beams aboard. Among the party is Adria, a 16-year-old member of the United Earth Defense Force. Nyota informs Saru and Burnham that the Federation and Starfleet are no longer on Earth, that the planet is no longer even a part of the Federation. When a dilithium raiding party approaches Discovery, the inspection team is unable to transport out because of a device that Adira secretly planted. Book and Burnham manage to trick the raider captain and capture him. We find out that the raiders are from Saturn's moon, Titan. They have become desperate for supplies after an accident and have been unable to get any help from United Earth. Peace is brokered, and several members of the bridge crew travel to Earth and the former site of Starfleet Academy. While on board Discovery, Burnham accepts the position of second in command on Discovery.
Where to begin? Where to begin?
A lot of stuff going on here in this episode. I don't know where to begin. I guess the best place to begin is
at the beginning.
Was what happened what you expected to happen? You know, when you last season we saw them head into the wormhole. Did you expect such turmoil when they get to the other side?
Oh, I knew it wasn't going to be we were given some hints about, you know, the how come there's only like six stars on the Starfleet flag or Federation flag. So we were given a few teasers and we knew life wasn't as we knew it today, just advanced technology 900 years. So I do like the fact that they played along with that. It's pretty much a blank slate. They can go wherever they want. With the story, I thought some of the advanced technologies and acknowledging the older technologies, like, wow, look at these antique communicators and phasers and tricorders. These will fetch a nice price. Or, a view screen. How quaint. Like, ooh, yes, very Scotty. Yet they introduced us to some new technologies, like the new transporters, where it's like personal transporter. Bam, you're like, there.
Yeah.
Or programmable matter, which I thought was really awesome. I want to be able just to wave some pens around and make some stuff like a 3D printer. Yeah. That was really cool. Yet they still stuck to the basic tenets when they wrapped up episode three, with Saru Broker. You saw Giorgio, you know, take the guy's helmet off and suddenly he's vulnerable. And they, you know, talked it out and said, hey, maybe we can arrange some kind of an agreement. And they did. I thought, wow, that was so classic Starfleet. James Kirk should have been there.
Well, I also noticed that I was listening to the music. By the way, this one thing to note here about the music is because this was all scored.
Oh, that's right.
Lockdown. All the musicians were sending in their own separate pieces of music.
Oh, that's right.
All assembled for this. So when you go back and listen to it again, you know, be amazed about, you know, that kind of process going on.
Yeah, there was nothing to really pick up on to let you know that this wasn't done in, you know, in a concert hall or in a recording studio of some type. That was pretty awesome. So kudos to you, sound guys and girls.
Well, you know, hey, there's a lot that magicians.
It's amazing.
Well, they did conjure some stuff up. These musicians can do with Zoom and stuff like that. There's some, you can do some high or low latency calls, which we've seen the setting in the Zoom for that, for music. So they can perform together a lot easier. So there's things they can do. And obviously it paid off because I think either they all work together very well. So it's really cool.
Right. And what I was noticing is that every once in a while, you would get the first two or three notes of Discovery's theme.
Yes.
Or the fanfare. And it would never finish. And it finished when Saru brokered that first piece. And then you get the big swell of it when you pull back to see Starfleet when they're back on Earth. So it's like you're waiting for it and you're waiting for it and you're waiting for it because it's like, I guess that's not going to happen. And I think that's kind of like a musical reinforcement of this is how it begins type of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was also noting that it seems that that personal transporter is really more like either a sonic screwdriver or a tricorder, whatever, however you want to call it, because I believe it's the same thing that Book gives to Burnham while they're sitting by the water there so she can call up the communications thing. Because he hands her this little tiny thing, and I think he says something about it does lots of stuff.
Ooh.
So that is not just a personal, you know, transporter. Okay. That is other. We don't know all the things it might do, apparently.
Yeah, she's got her own sonic screwdriver.
Exactly. As well as a change of hairstyle, which also is reflected in the credits at the beginning of the show. We also had a couple of other things that...
Hey, by the way, I saw this tweet. It was somebody did a screenshot, and this lady said, "What? In the future, does it still take 4 hours to braid all that hair?"
No, they have a machine to do it.
Hey, it's worse than you thought. Grudge the Cat did it for, and it's painful. It's really painful.
Programmable matter.
So in the opening credits, as we know, they've changed occasionally. Mm-hmm. They changed for season two. We had different Starfleet emblems show up, and the captain's chair changed. This season, we have some changes again. One of the things is that we no longer have green crystals around the ship. We have red dilithium crystals around the ship at the beginning. We now see the line of DOT-7 robots for some reason. Don't know why they have such prominence, whether they get played up bigger. We did see them in, I think, the third episode. We did see them repairing the ship on the outside.
Oh, wow.
Tonight. And then
on the third one, they did.
Yes.
They were.
Yeah. And then we see the new emblem for Starfleet, which does have the Delta shield in it, but it's encased in something else. And I don't think we've seen that badge yet.
In the oval?
We will. Yeah, so I think we will see that at some point, but we have not seen it yet.
Were either of you surprised that Earth left the Federation?
Well, I guess, you know, with what they were talking about, that they felt like it sounds like they didn't know who to trust. Like, how did this happen? We don't know how it happened, and it's going to happen again. Or was somebody targeting Starfleet? And hey, look, we've got Starfleet sitting right here on Earth, and maybe we shouldn't have that. And I guess it was a big movement to just get rid of that. What I thought was odd, though, is that no one knows where they went.
Yeah.
That's a little, you know, we're just going to pack up and leave in the middle of the night. We're not going to tell you.
Don't worry about where we're going. We'll call back. We'll call you.
Yeah, don't forward our mail. You know. It's just... And it's also like, it's like they're the same thing. So did the Federation and Starfleet leave at the same time,
right,
and go the same, because
right.
It's not the same thing.
No, it's not.
And I think often people, you know, conflate the two of them together as one unit. They're not. It was like, you know, I don't know where we'll find them, if they'll be together as one unit on some planet someplace. I don't know what to make of that.
I do have a question. Yeah, I don't know either. But a little side note on the dilithium crystals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of course, this is a big part of the story, because we saw all the ships blow up and they were explaining the burn. So I have two questions. One, I didn't realize that each ship had such a large cache of dilithium crystals. You know, usually, well, even on the TOS episodes, they're always like, oh, we had a problem with dilithium crystal and they're looking for them or something, not like they have a big old room full of them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I was wondering, is did Discovery have such a large amount because perhaps theoretically it was, well, you know, you could find yourself by accident thrown to the other side of this galaxy or something, and you're going to have to make your way back by yourself. And so they decided to give them lots of dilithium. I'll argue that maybe is the cause why they have so much.
Well, I was also, I got another question too, but I didn't realize that they broke down that fast, you know, where, oh, you get just a little bit and then that only take you so far and then you got to get more.
Well, they may not have been they may have been only giving them,
they
marble sized pieces. I mean, very small pieces.
The stuff that Burnham was grabbing from the mercantile, I think that's the size of crystal that they were handing out to people, if not smaller than that. They said they gave him just enough to run the errand and make it back again to run another errand. So probably is a very, very small piece of crystal that they're given.
Yeah.
And a larger piece is worth a lot more.
I got a little confused at the continuity in the third episode when they were out there saying, okay, lower your shields and we'll beam over the dilithium. And the next scene, they're on the bridge with the captain. I went, what happened?
Well, they said that, so they were in a situation where Earth was going to fire again.
Yeah.
And Book was saying that the next shot is probably going to take out Discovery and you with it. So you've got two choices, either lower your shields so we can send over the dilithium or not, and I'll sleep good either way. So he agreed to lower the shields. And while he's giving that order, I think it's Book, it might've been Burnham saying, and we're going to have to move fast.
Yeah. Like, we're going to have to move fast.
Once the shields are down, they'd go over and
beam them
over. This thing.
So they nabbed him.
Yeah.
Okay. That's kind of what I figured happened, but it just kind of got lost in the editing somewhere in my mind.
So another big thing that happened that we didn't talk about in the recap there was we have the introduction of Adira, and forgive me if I just get myself mixed up, but I believe they kept this a secret because we're going to be introduced to another character who is a Trill.
Yeah.
And we were also given, you know, a brief synopsis of this Adira character. Did not mention any place that she was a host of a symbiont. And I felt like that was a surprise in the episode that we knew that there was going to be a Trill, but the Trill doesn't have the symbiont in it. A human does. And how that happened, you know,
it could have been one of those situations where kind of like on Deep Space Nine, where it was an accident. Oh, we got to hurry up. We got to put him in something.
Right. Right. I think that is correct, which is why I think that the same problem that we've seen other characters have when they're not really prepared for this, that they don't really have the same communication with the symbiont that a prepared Trill would have, which is why I think, I know I'm also this admiral, but I can't really, you know.
Well, they didn't say whether or not Senatal may be a Trill. They didn't say one way or another, but they
said it was human, or she was human.
Yeah, she was human.
The 15-year-old girl.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Came from, she said, I'm Senatal, which implied to me that Tal is the symbiont, like Dax is the symbiont, that Senna was the host, and Senna was probably a Trill. But like through some mix-up or an emergency, it went from Senna to, what's her name? Adira.
Right.
So technically, she's Adira Tal.
You take one a day, And
I was thinking that earlier when you were reading the story, like Senatol. If you want to run for public office, take Senatol twice a day.
And Chuck, because I'll make the same mistake at some point, that she, they're them.
Okay, thank you.
She is non. She just to say she non-binary. It's a non-binary actor. So they are them. I believe are the pronouns.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Yep.
Okay. I'll forget. We'll all forget. We'll get used to being correct. You know, getting it in our heads, and we'll get there.
We're old guys. It's 2020. Give us cut us some slack. We'll get there.
To me, it's a help. To me, it was a help. You know, talking really, it's a help that actor has the symbiont. Yep. I immediately think of it as a they.
There you go.
So, you know, that helps an awful lot. So what will come of that? Is this something where the symbiont will over time be able to access more? So we find out more about, we talked about having that character that could feed out information and whether or not we wanted that. In last week, last episode, we talked about that. And I have this feeling that maybe that is going to happen in bits and pieces. Maybe not, but you get that hints because it's something they were talking about. Well, maybe the symbiont has some information about what happened with Starfleet and the Federation. We'll have to see what happens there. What did people think of the fact that they let the bad guy go? The Zara character, I saw that as a giant mistake. You spent a lot of time on that character and you just send them out into the cold. I don't think it's the last we've seen.
Oh, heavens no. That was definitely a hook.
That was an open door to come back.
Yeah. We just don't learn from Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, do we?
Exactly. We should go back and visit that planet and see what happened to them.
Nah.
Well, I was also thinking today that planet, Tilly says that there was dilithium there as well as many unknown elements.
Like a whole new periodic table. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm wondering if we're actually even going to go back to the colony again at some point. Because there's floating rocks. There's all this weird stuff going on there.
Yeah, what was up with the floating rocks? There must have been like some weird magnetism going on to have these things floating around.
Gravity was broken right there.
Apparently. But yet the ship is stuck on the ice and the ice is stuck on the ship. My whole mind about physics got broken on that part.
Well, speaking of physics, as the Discovery is doing its crash landing, we get the fact that they're coming down on ice because they're trying to, you know, not just crash land on the ground. Although I don't know if you talk to somebody involved with physics, whether they go ice or solid ground at that speed, does it make a difference?
Even water.
They did fire phasers, which I think they were trying to melt some of the ice at the very last second, which is, I'm assuming that's why they were firing phasers.
Yep.
But as they're sliding across the ice, they lose shields. And I'm thinking, you've got this tiny little antenna at the front of the deflector array. Is that still there?
Well, let's talk about
slamming into something at the end of that pod. Just like wham. And I go, man.
Right.
Detmer. She didn't come through this unscathed. And yet, by the end of episode 3, they didn't really mention much about it. So I suspect whatever it is going on with her is coming back, and it's going to be one of those, didn't you tell us anything was going on?
Yeah, she hit her head. I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, she did in the third episode when Saru was telling, first of all, when Burnham is saying, explaining what happened to the dilithium and the ships exploded, you get this look that comes on Detmer's face and she says, how many died?
Mm-hmm.
And when she says millions, her face just almost goes white.
Yeah.
And when Saru was telling her to put the Discovery between the Earth Defense's weapons and Book's ship. She's like, but we don't have shields and blah, 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 blah. She doesn't want to do it. So I think that my personal opinion is that my first reaction is that she's got, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder.
Or just maybe that could be a concussion. Possibility. Or when she hit her head, a little, the piece that is on her head, technology, I forget. Anyway, I'm not even sure what it does.
Yeah, her
maybe it's damaged or something, and it's not helping her keep a straight mind.
Well, she went, I mean, granted that the doctor did not examine the tech that I know of. She did confirm that Detmer did not have a concussion or anything and sent her on her way.
Mm-hmm.
But there was also that moment when she stands up after the crash landing and she can't hear it. Everything's all muffled
And humming.
And she's just hearing single voices coming through. And she just, you know, just there's something going on there. And I don't know enough about that disorder to find out there might be some of out there going, clearly they know that this is kind of the telltale signs of
Rutherford's disorder.
I was going to say the same thing.
She's got Rutherford disorder.
Well, he's got ripped out. I'm curious to see.
But he was still punching the button, you know, going through all the personalities and whatnot. It was kind of whacked out for a while.
So you're saying just press her button a couple of times and get back to normal mode?
But she's got to go through about 64 other modes in serious sequence.
But you guess cowboy mode will know that it's right around the corner.
Yeehaw!
It's like it's right now. It's just flashing 12 like a VCR.
I did not know that. I did not know that.
Yeah, it's happens. In her eye, her display.
We got a couple of callbacks to things going on in this episode. One of the ones that stood out to me was we actually get mention of the Temporal Wars from Enterprise.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
In the first episode. It was full of little Easter eggy type things there. Of course, we have the thing that I found to be interesting, because I think the Easter egg of going into the Jeffries tube and doing all that work at the last minute type of stuff was we now have a dynamic that's part McCoy Bones and part Odo and Quark in Stamets and Reno.
Yeah, I was picking up on that. You'd think, you know, both being engineers or engineering types, that they would have been a little more compatible.
I know I wrote down that she calls, you know, and she has nicknames for him like Sunshine, Crazy Pants, and Bobcat. Bobcat, I'm on drugs. I don't, you know.
Yeah.
Well, you know, how many people has Stamets actually worked well with until recently?
That's true. That's true.
Tilly.
Well, before he got all groovy Stamets, we also spent a lot of time for some reason. I don't know if this was important or not, on the fact that Stamets had to spend time in the regeneration chair, the dermal regeneration chair. It just seemed like an awful long scene and an awful lot of time and a room all set up to do this thing. So maybe it's the tech we're going to call back to later on. I don't know, but this, why would you spend so much time on that in an episode? It just really stood out to me as there. I think there's got to be something else going on with that chamber, or something's going to happen there.
Yeah,
I don't know if you guys got that same vibe or not.
No, I get the vibe that they're trying to make the show end on happier notes as it goes along.
Well, I mean, that's always a good thing, you know.
I think it is. Well, you know, at the end of the third one, they were standing around the Tree of Life, and then you know, and Saru, who always has to stand up and make a, apropos speech. So
I really did like the scene where, he said, hey, Michael, we're supposed to have this little talk. And she says, no, we don't need it. You're the captain.
Yeah.
Now, I really enjoyed that.
Yeah. I was like, yes, Saru's going to become a captain. That's awesome.
At the same time, everyone on the bridge is having the same reaction that we probably were also having, going, what the heck is going on with Burnham? She's well, like, no, you have it.
Whatever you're smoking, I want some.
Some of that dilithium crystal on the...
Exactly. Dilithium crystal light. I don't know what's going on there. Now, another question is, kind of my last question is, do you think that we will see the Starfleet liaison again, or was that very powerful scene in the first episode that ended?
The guy who was manning the post
every day for 40 years waiting for somebody.
We have high hopes the solar cells we've deployed will work. I'm sorry. He looks like the guy on, Star Trek 2, 3, 4.
Luke has a count on his fingers. He almost had to take off his shoe for that one.
The whales. Oh, I see what you're talking about. Yes, okay.
Remember, I don't know who the characters were. One of
the ships that was just in, everything was all, Batman camera angled with the people in the ships. And they had someone from the Go-Go's was another one of the captains.
At
first I thought we would go back to that character because you would want to be able to build from someplace, and it seemed like, okay, well, why not have it be this place you start building out from?
Right.
Because he's there. Then they go to Earth, which apparently is very far away from that location, although he referred to what sectors, and we know Earth is 001, which brings up another question that I have, but
how did that happen?
They didn't refer to it by name in this episode. And I'm saying that Earth was 001, had always been in the series when they refer to it, because that's the home of the Federation and Starfleet and blah, blah, blah.
Not anymore.
Now, if it's not, is it just by, tradition? And it's still 001, even though it really doesn't have any significance to anything. Well, it's just another planet.
You have to shift everything if you change the...
Well, you update the Google Maps, of
right,
course.
Right, right. Yeah, it's like time zones. You just spring ahead, change a sector.
Why are we at Mars? Oh, I didn't update the maps before I left the house.
Thanks, Google.
I did like the way that the Raiders from Titan... say, the way you appeared on our Mars out of no place, and they make a point when Discovery jumps.
Right next to Saturn.
Just outside of Saturn.
That's right.
Why they picked them up.
So there must have been some massive terraforming on Titan is what I'm guessing, because it's not that hospitable right now. And yet there were apparently farming or something, or...
Yeah, I forget what they said that they were doing there when their equipment got damaged.
Moisture farmers.
Oh, no.
Uncle Owen.
No.
Oh, sorry. Wrong franchise.
Two sons. Anyway.
We only got one.
Well, Jupiter, after 2001, it changed into another star. Oh, anyway. Boy. All right. So I think it's time to rate these episodes so we can wrap up episodes 1, 2, and 3. So let's go down in order for episode 1, the way we did the recaps. So Chuck, what did you think of part one of That Hope Is You?
I liked the way they brought in the new season. I thought it opened up a lot of opportunities. I didn't really have a whole lot of preconceived notions. Thought it was a little slow in certain places. I'm going to go with an 8.5.
Okay. Craig, what about you for That Hope Is You part one?
I would say a solid 8.5 because I liked some of the humor in it. I saw Michael get a little more, but she was under an influence. It was
You can't give this to a friend of mine who's got red hair. Yes.
Yeah. I thought that was kind of fun. That was fun. So there were some fun moments to it. Almost, forgive me, but like in the original Star Wars, A New Hope, there's like a little bit of tension and there's, you know, a little bit of anxiousness to keep moving and get through the story, you know, for the characters they're working mm-hmm. together. That's the kind of feeling I got a little bit through that. And I enjoyed that between Book and Burnham.
Okay.
So I thought it was a solid 8.5.
Okay. Sure. And actually, I'm going to give it an 8.5 as well. That I liked where it started off. I did feel, that there were some slow bits in there to varying effects. I mean, you can't have it be all, you know, action all the time, and you don't want to have it slow all the time. I felt the part that I didn't like the most was Molly attacking the security people, you know, off of Book ship. I felt that was too, like, that's telegraphed, like, from the beginning of the scene that's going to happen. And I felt like that just took too long to get to something we all knew was going to be the case. But other than that, I thought a lot of it really, really worked for me. And I thought it was a good setup. All right, we'll go in the reverse order for episode 2, which is not part 2 of anything. And that is Far From Home. This one I'm going to go lower on because I felt it was clearly a bottle episode. And for those of you not familiar with that term, essentially you come up with episodes at certain points in a season to save on your budget. You do something that doesn't involve any new sets. You just use existing things. You stay within the ship, like a ship in a bottle. Mm-hmm. So really, they were on location for shooting the exteriors because they were already on location.
Do we know where that was, by the way? Was that Alaska? Was it Iceland?
I think it was Iceland.
Okay.
And then your other set was kind of, this almost looks like a Western bar, and the people coming in look like they have spurs. And we're
the swinging doors were like, that was a little too gratuitous for me.
So I felt like, and I wasn't a fan of Saru letting Giorgio go so full Giorgio on everybody in there. Right. And then just decides, you're not going to kill this one guy that's probably the worst of the bunch. So it just seemed weird. So I'm going to go on that one. I'm going to say that one is a 6.5 for me. And we'll go backwards from there. So we'll start with next with Craig for that.
Again, in this episode, you could tell that the showrunners and the writers are making a little slight course correction for the way that some of the relationships are handled, you know, not going so trying to be gritty and I say gritty, but you know, in the first two seasons, mm-hmm. everybody's so matter of fact, where we had Reno and Stamets had some interesting, you know, back and forth, stuff like that. You got to see a little bit of Culber and Stamets going on. So between that, I like the visuals. I just kind of overlooked the Western bar, but yeah, you're right. It was kind of weird. It would be one thing even if we're in the very future and we're on Earth and you might see a place like that, but on this weird planet, why would they have a bar that looks like
spurs
you could walk
on
in?
Saru? Chink, huh? Chink.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Does the player piano?
Right. He starts quoting Clint Eastwood. Yeah. So, now that y'all mentioned it, it's kind of weird. I just kind of let it go. I didn't think much of it. But overall, I thought it was pretty good. I would totally give this a 7. I liked the reveal at the end because I was like, oh, crap. What do they got to get into now when the tractor beam was pulling them up? And then all of a sudden, there's Michael. I was like, oh, good. So moving things along. So I thought it was a easy 7.5 maybe. I'll say 7.5. I'll give it that.
Is she wearing her hair differently? Anyway.
It's regulation.
And Chuck, what about you with Far From Home?
This episode, you're right, it was the B-side of the same record. It needed to be told. We had, in the first episode, we have Michael's arrival story and struggles and that kind of thing. So the obvious follow-up story was going to be where's Discovery? Because we knew they got separated. You knew they were going to get separated for the moment they went into the bloody wormhole thingy, you know, time portal. That was a given because she was so far ahead. That's just going to happen. So this story needed to be told. I thought it could be told a little bit better. The saloon thing was a little, like you said. There were a number of elements that I did enjoy. I mean, I will never turn down a good Giorgio fight, regardless of who it's against or you know, how many. They need her as, you know, the ruthless, uncontrollable element, as it were, because Saru is very passive. She said, I think it was in episode 3 where she says, you know, it's time to, you know, fight or flight or whatever it was, the expression she used. And, she's the person to uncork that bottle. But, I particularly like the way she engaged that guy too. It's like, what did she say? Something about, what you call pain, I call foreplay or something. It was, and it's just, you guys are going to listen to this guy. He's going to lead you to his death. I could do this in my sleep. I like Giorgio's element. I'm going to go with a 7.5 on this one. It wasn't, spectacular, but it needed to be told, and I like the way they did it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And we're going on to the final episode of our trilogy. This time around is most recent episode, People of Earth, where Discovery makes it back to Earth. Dun, dun, dun.
What order are we in? We're back to the...
I'm going back down again, man.
Craig's always in the middle.
He's like Malcolm.
I liked this one. I was surprised at a number of things they released. Like, hey, guess what? Earth's not part of the Federation, and Starfleet's not here, and neither is the Federation people. They bugged out some time ago. I thought the captain of the Raider ship, when they caught him, and Giorgio, I did like, hey, let's just rip off his helmet and see what happens. Yeah. But he became very, very placid at that point. I mean, it was like, what? It's like, you're not so strong without your helmet. What was he, like a superhero or something? But it just, I thought that fell a little flat on me. By the way, I thought the ending of the second episode was a little predictable too. It was like tractor beam, gee, guess who's hauling them up?
I just had the blinders on too much because I was like, oh crap, where are we at now?
No, I was.
Well, they tried to set
surprised.
That up with Giorgio saying that there's somebody else on their way there.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
And when the Raiders were coming in, anytime you get, oh, there's some unidentified ships coming in just out of range, I usually go with the good guys. But I called that one wrong on those 5 Raiders that were coming in. It's like, here comes the cavalry. Oops. Nope. No, not that one. The fact that Earth has this defense grid. For the raw writing of this episode, I'm going to go back to like an 8.5. I thought it was very well told, and it set up a number of things. It finished almost like a season finale. I mean, it was a happy ending, and like we negotiated peace.
The credits roll and we all go home.
We've got some new elements in the story with, what's her name? Adira. I'm curious to see where that goes. Book walked out, but that's not going to be the last we see of him. Right. I have a sneaky suspicion from watching too many other TV shows. I don't trust him. I think he's going to be the, I'm sorry. I had to do this. I was, under orders from somebody else kind of thing. To betray him, so I think there's a betrayal coming up. Yeah.
Well, it could be a storyline that meshes with the Xena character, right? So they cross paths or something, and this chaos ensues because they have a common, knowledge of Discovery or something like that.
Yeah, it's not going to be easy. I mean, they're driving around an old bucket of bolts, a 900-year-old bucket of bolts. That's everybody's going to recognize the ship for what it is and the technology.
Did it just roll off the assembly floor? Wow, look at that.
Yeah. Well, not only that, it's like the wealthiest ship in the galaxy with all that dilithium.
Right, so now they're a target. So it's going to be an interesting season. I think the main premise of this season, if I'm not mistaken, is let's go find Starfleet And what happened to cause the burn? Was it deliberate or accidental? So I think we're going to get a good reveal at the end of the season.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Did I rate it 8.5?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And what about you, Craig?
Well, I'm going to say easily an 8.5. Also, I like how they did set up the precedent for a lot of things, especially you kept hearing Saru saying, that's not Starfleet. That's not Starfleet. You know, I was like, okay, I got it.
Yeah.
You're trying to stick to your principles. And they ended up kind of starting the process. It looked like setting the tone that we're here to make things right. Cause he was insisting they talk to each other and rather than just beating each other up. So trying to lay the groundwork that Starfleet's coming back in some form or fashion.
Okay.
So I liked all that. And I did like how you learn how things, you know, there's recognizable pieces from all the Trek that we know, but it's all in disarray and mixed around, you know, Starfleet's not here. Nobody can warp because the Drillithium crystals, blah, 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 you know, all that stuff. It's all mixed up. So I like how we learned a lot about that. And they did end on a happy note where the crew got to go walk around on Earth for an extra 5 minutes. You know, and hang out. So I think this episode, much like season one, you know, the first two episodes kind of set things up. The third episode is where the season kind of took off, right?
Right.
Same thing. I think it's the same kind of thing here a little bit.
Yeah. I tend to agree. I'm going to rate it a little bit lower. I'm going to rate it an 8.0.
Oh, gosh. I'm out of here. 8.0.
Yeah, dropping the mic and leaving. Because, and Chuck mentioned it as well, that I didn't think it was, oddly enough, I didn't think it was like the main thing of this episode, but I did not like that once that guy's helmet was off, I don't mind the reveal.
He got timid.
Yeah, I don't mind the reveal that he's a human. I don't, that's fine. But he just seemed to go from this to that. And it didn't seem to have a reason to be. So you couldn't spend a lot of time on that, but I felt like there must've been some better way to handle that, you know? So yeah. Jonathan, I got notes for you. So you can go back and do some reshoots on that.
Well, you're right. They did build up. Oh, these guys keep attacking us or, you know, they keep,
yeah, and they do anything, you know, to get this stuff and
knock his hat off.
Yeah. I think that the shell of that was there because we have that point where he's talking about the fact that they had sent a ship to try to get help from Earth and they were just destroyed. And so some of the elements to make that a powerful exchange were there. They just couldn't follow through correctly on that. But like I said, I almost didn't see that as a part of the story I was really concerned about to begin with, you know?
Right.
So it's just like, oh, and they make a negotiation that kind of gives an example to United Earth. Maybe you should think about doing this kind of thing. You know, I'm just saying,
right. Yeah.
Don't shoot first, everybody, that type of stuff.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm laughing. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I just happened to see this article says says Star Trek Discovery goes Scooby-Doo in season 3, episode 3. And I went, what? Oh, they took the hat off and it's just meddling hats.
Yes, that's exactly it. They went Scooby-Doo.
You meddling humans.
I find interesting, I'll leave on this and then we're going to close up main mission, is that in the Far From Home episode, Zenas talks about I'm going to get this pronunciation on this correct, otherwise it's not going to work out so well. Let's see, let me find Vadash Captain. I think that's it, Vadash. Vresha mm-hmm. Captain. And that part is subtitled. If you listen to all of that text that they're saying with the subtitles underneath it, and he refers to it as pigeon, like in, you know, pidgin English or a pidgin language,
right?
You get bits and pieces of English in it, and things are short changes. And that Brescia, if you don't pronounce it exactly right, it doesn't, you don't catch it, but it sounds like Federation, and it's exactly the same word that Kraft uses to discuss the enemy he's fighting in Calypso.
Oh. So we've got a little a bit of a thread to pull on.
Right, because he identifies him as the enemy that he took one of their ships, and he says, oh, you know, that those Brescia, they love their old, you know, mm-hmm. movies or whatever stuff is. And
yeah,
so
there was a movie scene coming up in the next episode.
I'm waiting for them to install the fancy schmancy home assistant that,
yeah,
you know, Calypso. Exactly. It's like, where's the, that's coming. That's coming. Maybe not this season. Maybe not next. It's coming while they're in the future, because we know Calypso is stuck on the ship with that artificial intelligence.
Yeah. It's funny you bring that up, because every one of those shorts fit into the stories.
Yes.
You know, somehow. And then except for that one. But then, of course, we found out that they were going into the future, mm-hmm. which is not far probably from the time that they were already, you know, in the future in that story.
Yeah, except that, you know, when I thought about that, but if she's been waiting, and I can't remember the name that the computer had. She's been waiting 1,000 years while the crew was gone. That clock doesn't start ticking
until they're gone.
And right now they're there. So that 930 years does not count towards the 1,000. They have to be gone 1,000 years from, you know,
sounds like my health deductible.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know what's going on there. And I, you know, there's a implication of 1,000+ year war or something going on. It's who the heck knows what's going on here. So we hopefully will find out more answers to some of that, but probably not for a while.
Oh, wait, what was your score?
Oh, that's right. My score. I gave my score, didn't I? Yeah. 8.0 for that.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's right.
Very nice.
Okay. 8.0.
Let's come back from main mission. And then really quickly in warp speed round table,
You are in error.
Well, I guess we're not allowed to come back from Warp Speed Roundtable. We're stuck here in the future. Okay.
930 seconds in the future. So recently I read this article called 10 Star Trek Quotes That Are Hilarious Out of Context. And I read the article, and I will link to it in the show notes for episode 78 over at thetopicistrek.com. But they seemed rather mundane, and I thought it's got to be more out of context things that people have said in Star Trek than these things. They're almost like catchphrases that they're using in there.
Yeah.
I didn't know if you guys could think of anything. Well, I just,
the obvious ones that I came up with were, you know, beam me up, like get me the heck out of here. Or, you know, but I went on a little spelunking, because I think Worf is one of the funniest characters when he's not trying to be funny.
You know, right.
When he's sitting in the mud on TNG at the end of the show with Lwaxana and Alexander, he says, "You're supposed to just sit here." You know, when I'm waiting for something, that goes through my head. Or another one, which makes it sound more like Tyrion Lannister from Game of Thrones. He says, "I am a graduate of Starfleet Academy. I know many things," because, you know, Worf recites the rules of acquisition to Dax when they're on the shuttle.
I drink and I know things.
Yeah, right. I drink prune juice and I know things.
Right.
We just got Worf Lannister.
Hey, one of my favorite Worf quotes is, "I am not a merry man."
Yes.
Right. Which is funny, because he has another discussion with Dax. He says, "I have a sense of humor. On the Enterprise, I was considered to be quite amusing." And she says, "That must have been a dull ship." That was a joke. I get it. It's not funny, but I get it.
Yeah.
I mean, they wrote him really well.
All right. Any other thoughts on that? I had one here that's just like, out of context means nothing. I mean, I'm thinking about Captain Terrell going, "It's harder than you think, Doctor." You know, it's just out of context. That just doesn't, you don't want to be thinking about that statement.
Or, you know, that whole dialogue between Mariner and, "Why are you always so hard on me? I'm hard."
Yes, exactly. No, exactly. Just like that.
That doesn't even need to be taken out of context. It was terrible.
Oh. Yeah. Well, you could almost take anything that Dr. McCoy said out of context. And, you know, I'm a doctor, not a insert.
Well, that was one of the things they had in the article. And, you know, if you take it out of context, it's still the same sentence. But it has its own context around it. That's, I don't know.
Perhaps today is a good day to die. I think I've used that a few times
at work. Yes. When things are going all terrible shape. Yeah. That's a good one. Just about any line from Darmok.
Yeah. That out of context means absolutely nothing. Actually, in context, it doesn't mean anything. Yeah.
But to another Trekkie, it means everything.
True.
I cannot change the laws of physics. That's another. Oh, here you go.
You mean like here's this?
A good one. Can't change the laws of physics.
Yeah. What does God need with a starship?
There you go. Yeah, nice one. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. If you have any.
We have an imposter aboard.
Out of context, the things you'd like to send away, we'd be happy to hear about them. Information on how to get in touch with us at the end of the show. Speaking of which, it is the end of the show.
Already?
It's time to refill the dilithium crystal chamber because we still got some. Don't tell anybody. Yeah. Yes?
Hey, out of context, Riker said, delete minuet program. I don't think he said that, actually.
But first, I need you to draw me a map. That's an episode. Anyway, so please, we're not selling the dilithium crystals. They're just for us because we run on impulse power. Remember? Anyway, you can find me, Clinton, and how many times have I said anyway? Over at Comedy Forecast, all one word, with the number 4.com. You can find me on Twitter and Facebook and MeWe and Instagram. And the bottom of your shoe, really, look at the bottom of your shoe.
There it is.
Yeah, see?
Where's the stick? I got to scrape this off.
No. And who speaks for you guys this week?
I will.
Okay.
Oh, you ready now? So you can find Chuck and myself over at the Technorama podcast. You go look for, just search for Technorama podcast in all your Googles and you'll find us. We are over at chuckchat.com. We record on Sunday nights at 9:30 promptly at 9:30 on Sunday nights.
Take that out of context.
Yeah, right.
So go find our page on Facebook and you can.
What wormhole did you fall into? Oh,
we have a YouTube channel. You'll find us there too.
And if you believe that one, I've got some Quatloos I could sell you. Anyway.
Got a wormhole.
Anyway.
The wormhole you bought from the Barzans?
Right.
It's time to hit the theme, boys. If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you never miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you. Follow us on Twitter at The Topic is Trek, visit our Facebook page, or visit thetopicistrek.com. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, and myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic is Trek, don't
put on
the red shirt. And if you can spell that, you can go back on duty.
Shazbot.